Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased, in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series, Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a month had passed, and my cousin and I discovered that Avatar, a show about an airbender named Aang, would start streaming on Netflix in a few weeks. And although our podcasting skills are great, we had a lot of episodes to watch before we were ready to podcast for anyone. But we believe Aang saved us from the chaos of our world. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Hi everyone, today we're continuing our journey through Avatar, The Last Airbender. I'm Andrea, Paul and I are cousins who love fantasy and sci-fi and talk about it endlessly.
And today we continue through Book 2. Avatar Aang is still seeking an earthbending master. He's putting mastering the Avatar state on hold for a minute and shared a little kiss with Katara in a cave. Zuko, meanwhile, has gone from exiled prince to fugitive, with his sister Azula tracking him through the continent.
If you've been listening to our previous Atla episodes, you know that each episode we discuss several chapters of the series and provide our reflections on the themes and share what we've learned. This week, we're discussing episodes 4 through 6, so if you haven't watched through the end of episode 6 yet, please go back, watch it, and come back when you finish.
But you're not new to this, you're true to this, so you know that this podcast will have adult content. So if you're opposed to hallucinations of your ex-moon goddess girlfriend that totally can be explained scientifically, while you're thirsting over a Kyoshi warrior, then you might want to get away from here. This might not be the podcast for you.
We interrupt your regular broadcast to bring you something live from the capital city of the Earth Kingdom. A new song from General Iroh. Skyrocketing up the charts, Girls of Ba Sing Se.
It's a long, long way to Ba Sing Se, but the girls in the city, they look the so pretty.
Come on, yeah. We're talking a gold piece.
Oh, what?
Let's see some action.
Huh? Oh. That is what we're going to do. Yes.
We're going to
break
Uncle.
It down real quick like Uncle Iroh told us.
Yeah, we are.
Come oh. On. Hey. Hey.
No Sungi Horn.
Hey. Let's hey. Go.
I say the Ba Sing Se, say Ba Sing Se.
Say what?
Say Ba Sing Se,
oh, yeah.
Say Ba Sing Se.
Huh? We're on the way right now to Ba Sing Se, where the girls look sweet and they so pretty.
Say the Ba Sing Se, say Ba Sing Se. Say the Ba Sing Se, say Ba Sing Se. Say the Ba Sing Se, say
Ba Sing Se. Break it down,
where the girls so sweet and they so pretty. Say, I'll break it down now. I'll break it down now.
What we looking for? What we looking for? Come on, Andrew. What we looking for?
Break it down now. Break it down now. I'll break it down. Break it down. Break it down now.
What do you say?
Oh, where the blue spirit at? Let
them
know. Let them know. Where the blue spirit at? I don't know. Let them know. Where the blue spirit at? I don't know. Let them know. Let them know. Let them know. Let them know. Let
them know. Oh, man.
Listen, Iroh with the bangers off the top of the dome. The top of the dome.
That is a chart topper right there.
It's, I mean,
can
listen.
We get that up on karaoke?
We'll get that up on karaoke. We'll put it up there so that we can have like people just go in, drop it like it's hot up inside Ba Sing Se. That's what we want to do.
So good.
Oh, man.
Where the blue spirit at is what makes it art.
We don't know. Who is that fucking guy? He looks like Zuko. He might be Zuko. Who knows? Oh, man.
That was great. That was great.
Oh, gosh. So that's how we start off, okay? We start this whole freaking thing off with Iroh and Zuko hanging out on the side of a street. And now that they're fugitives, Iroh charming the ladies. You know, he's a ladies guy. He likes, you know, he flashes a smile, gets a little coin. And, you know, then he drops Ba Sing Se when an onlooking like person comes up and he has broad swords and he's like, hey, why don't you dance, you know, for your supper? And I wrote off the top of his dome.
Top of his head. Just freestyling in the marketplace.
I mean, Zuko's like, we're not performers. He says, I mean, professionally, showing that he is a hustler, baby. He is not messing around. Okay? He got up there. He sang, came up with that smash hit, chopping the target. And then when he was like, hey, dance, you need to dance. He got up there and did a little dance and sang the second verse to the song. All freestyle. I love it.
I'm just going to call it. Iroh missed his calling.
He did.
He really Maybe? Did. He doesn't need to be a general. He should be on the stage.
You know, that is a good point. I think like he needs to be like, he just needs a lifestyle brand. He knows how to get the massages. He has great wisdom. If he were, you know, I don't know, 2020, he would be the male Oprah.
Or an Instagram influencer.
He would be an Instagram influencer. Oh my gosh. Somebody please get on making that profile so he can become an influencer.
He has the good self-help quotes.
He does.
He has the relaxation and self-care. He has a mixtape. Like, he has everything.
He's got the detox teas. He's even got the detox teas. Like, he took them. It's great. It's amazing. All right, so Team Avatar is flying on Appa to Ba Sing Se. Where else would they be going? When Aang is drawn to the swamp below, Sokka and Katara are you know, sleeping, and Sokka's like, hey, buddy, why are you bringing us down? What's going on? And Aang, you know, he says, I feel like the swamp is calling me, and Sokka's like, nah, bruv, they probably don't have food down there, and, you know.
Sokka's always worried about food.
Always. Always. I mean, he ate rocks. He's not trying to eat.
A man after my own heart. Always worried about where we going to eat.
Where we going to eat. I love him. So basically at this point, they're like, no, we don't want to go to the swamp. And Aang agrees. He's like, well, since you guys, everyone, I'm outvoted, which is big for Aang, because normally he's like, no, I just got to go anyway. But he's like, no, since I'm outvoted, cool. We won't do it since everybody's so against it. At that point, they are chased by a tornado, and a tornado forces them to land in the swamp and are immediately separated from Appa and Momo.
Hmm.
Yeah, not cool. And Appa and Momo, they're not having such a great time of it either. They're having their own struggles, and they get caught up in vines of the swamp. And they're being tracked now by two swamp dwellers who want to eat Appa.
Who are also Southern?
What's up with that? How did they get Southern accents in the middle of the freaking Orient?
So weird.
Oh my gosh, very strange. But, you know, as Team Avatar decides to make camp for the night, the swamp becomes more and more ominous. It's getting weird out here. They have a sense that maybe they're being watched, but Sokka insists, no, guys, chill out with all this supernatural mysticism stuff. This is not possible. We're the only people in the swamp. And he's been hacking through the vines all day, even though Aang is like, you probably shouldn't. And then, you know, they're alone except for all those eyes that are on them.
Yeah, that was creepy.
It was so weird.
You know, when you go camping with your friends, there's always some weird thing that happens like right before you go to sleep.
It's like the rules, right? It's like,
yeah, there's always something that you like hear something approaching and you're like, you know what? Let's just turn off the lights. Put out the fire.
Put it out. It's done. It is super done. So at that point, while they're sleeping, a vine comes out, grabs each of them, and they're separated. The vine pulls them. It pulls Sokka, Aang, and Katara apart. So each of them, while they're apart, start looking to be reunited with their friends. But in that moment, the swamp starts showing them visions, and these visions upset them. Katara sees a vision of her mother, who, you know, she runs to, and, you know, then the vision changes, and she becomes immensely sad, which was a sad scene to see. And then Sokka sees Yue, and Yue is saying things like, you know, you didn't save me, and it's like really tough for him, and you know, that was to the point he turns around and she frightens the shit out of him. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it's basically a horror movie. I mean, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
You know, like, it, I Go on, because Aang's vision is what scared me the most.
And then Aang sees a girl who's hopping through the swamp, and she's laughing, and she's jumping around, and there's an...
She's,
you know,
dressed all in white.
Dressed all in white.
I don't like creepy kids in movies.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm scared to go to sleep now. Thanks. This is great.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, when you see, like, someone in, like, a long flowing dress, when they're by themselves, it's scary.
Also, in twins, laughing, she's, like, giggling. It was creepy. I didn't like it.
Yeah, it was weird. It was totally scary. Meanwhile, the swamp dwellers are trying to catch Appa and Momo. They're hot on their trails, but they're not very good at trapping. They're just not that talented at it. And Sokka and Katara and Aang finally reunite as Aang is chasing after the girl that he sees in his vision and runs right into Katara, which I'm sure he did not mind. That's all I'm going to say.
Chasing one girl, found another.
There you go. Yeah, and do you hear like the little bit of shade in Katara's voice when he's like, I my vision, I was chasing some girl. She's like, a girl?
A girl?
What girl? Oh, man. Pretty hilarious. So they discuss their visions, and they realize at this point that they're at the center of the swamp. Just as Sokka explains that there's nothing magical happening. This is all scientifically explainable.
Totally rational. There's nothing magical happening at all.
At all. Except for the giant swamp monster that attacks them out of nowhere. And Aang and Katara subdue the swamp monster and reveal that there's a man inside, bending the vines, right? So the man who is the protector of the swamp takes them to the sacred banyan grove tree. And they learn that the swamp is actually one big tree and that vines are spread out. The protector tells them that in the swamp, they see people that they've lost and the people that they're still connected to. Time is nothing but an illusion, and so is death. Aang figures out that his vision is someone that he will meet, not someone that he's connected to from the past. And I thought, you know, that was pretty interesting when he says time is an illusion and so is death.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, when you think about it, it's Aang is constantly dying and being reborn. The spirit inside of him, he's the avatar. He's every time. He was Roku. He was Kyoshi. And now he's Aang.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like kind of like, you know, cementing for him in this moment that here he is. That's an illusion, too. Like, you will continue. Your spirit will continue on. So.
Mm-hmm. And he's been asked to, you know, he's been held to account in the past for what his past lives have done. And he will is in the following episode. And so I thought this was really interesting. The time and death are both illusions, because for Aang, that's very much true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His life will continue even after he is gone. So I thought that part of the episode was really, really, really interesting to me. And also just like a lot of foreshadowing there for this series and even for the series that comes after it.
Yeah, I agree. And so Aang is like, you know, still concerned now after getting all this knowledge, and they realize that, you know, and the protector of the swamp realizes that they're, you know, not harmful, even though Sokka was who he was worried about earlier, who was chopping down the trees. And they now Aang and crew want to find Appa and Momo. And so Aang realizes the way that he can find Appa and Momo, since everything is connected, is to touch the core of the center of the banyan tree on the ground, right? He's going to touch the ground and basically go see through all of the vines of the swamp to see where Appa and Momo are. And he finally sees that they've been captured by the people who were chasing them throughout the swamp. And they figure out that the swamp dwellers are actually waterbenders. And at that point, they realize that they may be kin, you know, some massive way. They may be from the south. They use kin. It's great. And then the benders at that point in the swamp take the team avatar to have a meal with them,
Sokka is really interested in why they would want to eat Appa when they have all those, you know, crocodile-type animals around.
Yeah, but the crocodile's their friend.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, no, that's our homie. We're not going to eat him. So, and the episode ends with the merchant that made Iroh sing and dance in the beginning of, you know, that. I mean, truly, I don't understand why the Blue Spirit was upset at him, because, you know, it gave us joy to see Iroh busted out like that, but he is upset nonetheless, and the Blue Spirit has done away with him.
Can I just make a connection between this guy who made Iroh sing and dance, which was a humiliating experience,
yeah,
for Zuko? Iroh was not humiliated.
No.
And something that happened in our real world.
Yeah, please.
This was like the elevator situation with Beyonce, Solange, and Jay-Z.
Oh, please expand. Oh my God, it's great.
Iroh has this hit that comes out of this experience, which was humiliating to Zuko.
Yeah.
That situation with the elevator, Solange, and Jay-Z.
It's true.
We got three good albums out of that.
And a single. Of course some shit goes down when there's $1 billion in an elevator. That one line alone from a remix was worth it. But we got it, two albums plus a single is amazing.
We got three albums. Yeah. We got three albums. We got Lemonade.
Uh-huh.
What's Jay-Z's?
4444.
And then we got Solange's album too. We got three albums off of that elevator. I'm just saying. I think that they should lean into the humiliating experiences, because maybe instead of begging on the street, they can become artists and musicians.
I'm with it. And I mean, this is a very good, I love the tie-in. I love that, because we would not have Girls of Bossing Say without this moment. This was and to me, I know there's a lot of like banter out there on with the internets. I get it. I'm going to go on record. Girls of Bossing Say is the best song in this series. That is my feeling. Followed only by Leaves on a Vine. And I like all the songs. Kinda-ish. There's one song that we don't particularly like. But the point is that this is a classic. I mean, classic.
Instant classic. All right, well, on that note, let's talk about episode 5, Avatar Day. Mm-hmm. So after their experience in the swamp, Team Avatar wakes up to be attacked by a group of firebenders called the Rough Rhinos. Real cool name. Real real good name, guys.
Not good.
They manage to escape on Appa, but in the process, Sokka loses his boomerang.
And the thing about this is they lost stuff too. They lost stuff, and they went back and got theirs. Aang wanted his glider. Katara lost her pouch, right? That's what it was, right? And then
I think it was her scroll.
Her scrolls, yeah. Yes. No, she lost the scrolls. So Aang lost his glider. She lost her scrolls. Sokka's like, oh, so like you guys lose your stuff, you go back and get it, but my boomerang isn't, like, we're not going back to get it because we don't have enough time. And Katara straight, yep, exactly right. Rough look for Sokka, man. Like, Sokka's always... I swear, I'm gonna, like, justice for Sokka.
He always takes the L's. I was just like, this is not good. You know, they don't treat him with the respect he deserves. I love Sokka.
And he saves them so many times. It'd be one thing, like, in the beginning, you're like, okay, he's kind of being weird. Okay, that's my... But how many plans can we lay out that Sokka has saved them through? So many. Like, even just... like recently in Omashu, the freaking like Pentapox. I mean, this guy is idea man, a science man. They need to show him more love.
It's true. But alas, Sokka's boomerang gets left behind.
Yeah.
They find a shop to buy food, and the shopkeeper tells them that it's actually a holiday. It's Avatar Day.
Woohoo!
So they go to check out this festival in the local village, and the festival starts out great. Yeah. There's floats of Kaioshi, there's a float with Roku and Aang.
Wow.
And then things turn south really quickly when all of the floats are burned.
Down with the Avatar! Down with the Avatar!
Yeah, things got dark pretty quickly.
Oh, man.
Meanwhile, in another Earth Kingdom village, the blue spirit strikes again, stealing from people. Oh. Iroh is a little suspicious, but he's hungry, so few questions are asked. Yeah.
He's like, where'd you get this stuff? Oh, it looks good.
Never mind. So Aang makes himself known to the villagers, and the villagers angrily tell him to leave because Avatar Kyoshi killed their leader, Chin the Great.
They hide behind things and everything. Hey, look, he's going to strike us down. He's not.
Yeah, they're shook. They are terrified.
But let's shout out to Katara. Katara with the, like, quick move. She couldn't take it anymore, and she, like, puts out, like, Aang's, like, burning statue. So the love, the you know, these two, the combo. Like, Sokka was like, fuck it, it's a statue. Let it burn. You know what I mean? We're going to out ourselves? They want to kill us. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, but again, Sokka was right.
Yeah, he was.
Because these folks are bloodthirsty, and they accuse Kyoshi of killing their leader all those years ago. And then Aang basically says that he wants to share his name and he'll stand trial. And they imprison him right away.
Oh, God.
So Sokka was right.
Yeah.
While he's in jail, which he refuses to break out of, let's just put that there, he encourages Sokka to help him figure out what happened 300 years ago and to clear his name.
No, he manipulates Sokka into doing this. Oh my gosh. What? Well, I was going to ask you, since you're like the smartest person I know and just a great investigator, if you could figure this out. And Sokka like falls for it. Hook, line, and sinker. You just need.
He really does. Yeah. I mean, Sokka does like compliments. And so.
Well, he starved really for them. They treat him so poorly. Of course, he jumps at this opportunity to stand out because finally you're treating him with the respect that he deserves. Jesus.
It's true. So, back with the blue spirit. Mm-hmm. He robs a wealthy merchant who is traveling on a wooden road, counting his riches.
God.
And he just takes all of his money. You know, I can't say that I had a problem with this. I was down with the 1%.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, good.
Basically, he's basically Robin Hood.
Yeah.
I mean, he's keeping it all for himself, essentially, but he's Robin Hood.
Well, he is the poor at this point, so it might be bad.
So Sokka and Katara are taken by the leader of the village, the mayor of the town, to the ancient crime scene where Sokka does, like, his best impression of every lead in every procedural crime show ever.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's, you know.
He's, like, collecting physical evidence. He sees that the footprint of Kyoshi is, you know, there, left in the rock. She supposedly came out of the temple and struck down Chin the Great. And Sokka's like, I'm going to debunk this story. The stone and the statue are made from the same thing. Which I was like, okay.
Southern Water Tribe, CSI edition. Oh, God.
So they decide that they have to go to Kyoshi Island where their fans are really over enthusiastic to see them. And then they learn that Aang is not with them.
Where's Aangy? That was the cutest.
Yeah. I mean, there also is that one guy who like literally fainted. And then felt terrible because Aang was not even there.
That thing is a freaking gif that is the greatest. I use that thing the most. I love it.
It's good. It's really good. So the leader of Kyoshi takes them to the shrine. And, you know, on the way, Sokka slips in a casual mention of Suki. So where's she at?
Thirst. The thirst is real. This guy is parched.
Let's just say, literally one episode ago, he was mourning UA.
Yeah. This guy was like, you know what? He was quick on the rebound. This was like a rebound holler. Like, hey, so where's Suki? I noticed that she's not around. Oh, my gosh. Dude, the thirst is real. Really thirsty.
Yeah, totally real.
He's scrolling through Instagram.
Oh, yeah. liking all of her posts.
His explore page is all Kyoshi warriors. Like, that's what's happening right now.
So they learn that the Kyoshi warriors are all, they left to go join the war effort, which is, I found interesting because previously they had been neutral.
Yeah.
When they arrive in the shrine, they find that Kyoshi had giant boots and deduce that the small footprint that they saw could not be her.
Okay, this is one notch above the resolve of the fucking Great Divide. Okay, this is like big feet can't be hurt. The glove doesn't fit. You must acquit. Like, this is what the hell is happening over here.
I also love that Katara like figures everything out like 1 second before Sokka, yeah. And he's just like. He has to have the credit.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the best. She has to give it to him. And she should give it to him because they take so much credit away from him. Like, let's just talk about his track record. He drops the freaking slime that frees them from that shithole of an air temple that they left, right? When the Fire Nation was hot on their trail. He comes up with Pentapox, right? He's mm-hmm. come up with, I mean, there's a litany. Those are just two of his many accomplishments. And never, ever in either of those instances was there like, Sokka, good job. It's just like, on to the next.
Yeah, and he totally helped the Northern Water Tribe defeat the Fire Nation. Like, they would have fallen immediately if he hadn't given them intel.
He was the intelligence. He was literally the intelligence of that whole operation.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, Sokka deserves more respect.
Yeah.
But here he's... like one beat behind Katara every single clue that he sees.
Every time.
So they also see a mural that shows them that Kyoshi founded the island on the same day that she was supposedly murdering Chin the Great. Mm. So they head back because they feel like this is going to free Aang. And the mayor is unconvinced. He doesn't even want to hear any evidence. He's basically like, I say my piece, and then you say your piece. That's why it's called the justice system, because it's just us.
Well,
oh, it's so good. So Aang presents his case unsuccessfully. He really needed the dream team.
He really needed the dream team.
He's really struggling. Meanwhile, Iroh finally has a heart-to-heart with Zuko, who is really struggling himself with their current plight. He's still holding on to this idea that catching the Avatar is going to solve all their problems.
If I find the Avatar, I'll be able to restore my honor and bring back what I... Honor. I'm sorry. I love it. I just love that. I just love him. I love, even with how annoying he can be about his honor, it's still fun to watch him just grapple with this concept of someone else being able to give it to him. Anyway, that's my side note.
Yeah. I mean, Zuko's honor is really just a stand-in for being accepted.
Yeah.
But yes, he's very one note with his honor. So he feels really hopeless, which... understandable. They're literally homeless. Like, they don't have anywhere to go. And Iroh, in comforting him, tells him that he must never give in to despair.
Yeah.
And then says, possibly my favorite quote of this whole series, in the darkest time, hope is something you give yourself. Mm. That is the meaning of inner strength.
Word.
Really nice moment. I thought at that point, everything was going to be great going forward for Zuko. Not so much.
No.
So back at the trial... Katara introduces Aang, who is now wearing Kyoshi's clothing. Aang is now, like, in drag. Yeah. It was interesting. Yeah. Kyoshi does appear through Aang and tells her version of the story. Chin was a conqueror who threatened her homeland, and she split her island from the mainland, and in the process, Chin fell off of a cliff and died.
And Kyoshi gives zero fucks about it. Like, she just,
she's really unbothered. Totally unbothered.
Totally. And I don't blame her. Like, Chin sounded like a bad dude. Like, it didn't sound like a dude that you're like, oh yeah, I feel bad that he, like, listen. And it was due to his own ridiculousness that he took the L. Like, she didn't do anything wrong. She just was like, I'm separating my island from this craziness. And he's a little too heavy.
I'm fine with it, too. I didn't have any problem with it.
Also, just a little note. He happens to have small feet, which means a lot of things in a lot of circles. That's all I'm saying. He's overcompensating for something. That's all I'm saying.
So, back with Zuko and Iroh, after thinking about what his uncle said, Zuko tells Iroh that they must part ways. Mm. And then he leaves. It was devastating.
It's really tough.
I couldn't believe it. It was so painful.
Because Iroh's a good time, and he's a good mentor, and you almost feel like he is the compass that he's the person, if anybody, who could get Zuko to realize that what he's looking for is inside of him, right? And he doesn't have to have it from an external source. And to see him, you know, say, hey, we need to go our separate ways, because he can't really take the lessons that Iroh, it's almost like he's rejecting the wisdom that Iroh's been giving him about how he's handling himself, being the blue spirit and all these other things. And it's a sad moment for sure.
Yeah, no, it's tough because I really thought the first time I watched this episode that, like, as we've seen in the past, that when Iroh talks to Zuko, sometimes that wisdom changes, Zuko changes course, even if it's briefly, right? We saw this when Zuko was going to take his ship into the storm and Iroh talked him out of it. But this was really heartbreaking that instead of taking from what Iroh said, some kind of new path, what he basically decided was that Iroh didn't understand him, and so he needed to separate himself from Iroh.
Yeah.
It was hard to watch, and even though Zuko is an antagonist and we make fun of him, we love him.
Yeah.
Like, he's a great character. So I'm worried about Zuko. So this is rough. So back with Chin the Great in the trial, Aang is found guilty. The Wheel of Punishment decides that he should be boiled in oil. But then the cool gang, the Rough Rhinos, appear in the village, and his sentence is immediately reduced to community service. These villagers are very opportunistic, and they know that they need the Avatar to defeat the Rough Rhinos.
Yeah.
So he... Katara and Sokka face the rhinos and defeat them, and the mayor is very pleased, and it changes the whole meaning of Avatar Day, and so now it's a celebration, and that's the end of the episode.
Thing is, better food when Avatar Day was burning the Avatar. Now this new shit that they're giving, Sokka is none too pleased, nor would I be. That looked terrible. That food.
Why do they always eat stuff that is gross, like that they know to be gross, just because it's given to them? I guess they don't want to be rude, but I'm just like, I don't.
It's their inner Bourdain. It's their inner Bourdain. They're like, they need to taste it. They need to try it and go around and taste all the cuisine around the world. R.I.P. Anthony Bourdain. That's all I got to say. I love that show for that reason exactly, because he's like, why are you going to eat that? Oh, he's ate that. Oh, he liked it. Crazy. Anyway. So, now we move on to episode 6.
Big episode.
The Blind Bandit.
Woo!
The Blind Bandit.
Fan favorite.
I wonder who they could be talking about. Yes. So, Team Avatar arrives in Gaoling, where a local hustler tells them about Master Yu's Earthbending Academy and gives them a coupon. He's trying to, like, you know, it's like those guys in Times Square that try to get you to the comedy shows. If you're from New York, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They're hustling. They're like, here, 2 free tickets for you and your friends. Not free.
And they know who's from, like, they know the difference between a tourist and regular New Yorkers. Like, they're just, they don't approach us.
They only go
for the tourists.
Not at all. Just like that guy with the Cookie Monster outfit that always gets you guys. Don't let him do it to you. Anyway, Aang goes to school, but he decides that this school is not for him.
Because he's not good.
Yeah.
He gets washed.
He does get washed. It's wild. He's not very... I mean, he needs to learn earthbending still. He's a rook. He's a little rook, little pup. He hears two students talking about an earthbending tournament that's going to happen, though, and they refuse to tell him about the tournament. But you know what? This is where Katara comes in, because she's not about that life. And she basically says, hey, guys, let me throw in a little charm. And she goes around the corner and comes back with the information. Thing is, she actually froze their ass. she has no questions.
A girl has her ways. Yeah. Waterbending ways. She froze them. She froze used their force. Ass.
Exactly. So then we show up to Earthbending 6. It's like WrestleMania, but earthbending style, right? So the boulder will face off against the reigning champ, the Blind Bandit. And he's successful in defeating his challengers, including the Fire Nation man and
Boo!
The hippo. Yeah. What the hell was that about? The
hiss. Boo.
Boo. So Katara suggests that Aang ask the boulder to teach him. But remembering what Bumi told him, he wants someone who listens to the earth. So he doesn't think that that's the person. Finally, the boulder faces the Blind Bandit, a young girl who is blind. Aang realizes that this is the young girl from the vision in the swamp. It's the same person. Wow. So it was in the future that he was seeing. It's amazing. And using her body to sense the vibration from the earth, the Blind Bandit destroys, I mean, wrecks
the boulder. Just the boulder is like licking his wounds. Like, it's really bad.
The boulder turned into a pebble hella fast. He's done. So the announcer offers a reward for anyone willing to face the Blind Bandit. And Aang, because Aang can use airbending, he says, sure, I'll do it. But he really just wants to talk to her, right? He's not trying to, like, he really wants to get her to train him. And totally oblivious to the moment, he walks out into the ring. But the Blind Bandit is like, okay, well, here's my challenger. But at that point, Aang uses airbending to move around the arena, and she can't sense his movements because she's blind, and her senses come from feeling him through her feet. So Aang wins, and the Blind Bandit leaves. She's pissed off, and Aang's like, wait, can I talk to you?
So mad. So mad.
Yeah, and you know, rightfully so. It's kind of cheat. Is it cheating if it's an earthbending, earthbending 6, and then you airbend in the earthbending tournament?
Yeah, I did feel like it was cheating. You know, I mean, it comes up later, right? That he never actually moved the boulder through bending. He moved it through airbending, so whatever. Anyway.
So they head back to earthbending school because, you know, couldn't get in touch with the Blind Bandit because the Blind Bandit is salty that she lost in the tournament. And, you know, the kids that Katara got the tournament tickets from tell her that they don't know anything about the Blind Bandit. There's nothing that they know. But when Aang describes his vision, they tell him that the flying boar is the symbol of the Bei Fong family, a wealthy local family that lives in this town. So remember, in the swamp, there was the symbol of a flying boar next to the character, the Blind Bandit, that was in the swamp, the vision that Aang had in the future. So they leave in search of this family now that they have this information. Sokka takes a minute to throw up gang signs.
It was, I love this part. This
is like
one of my favorite parts of any episode. Sokka's like, water tribe.
Yay, yay. Ice cube. We hit him with the ice cube. It's great. It's awesome. So meanwhile, Jin Fu, the proprietor of the tournament, and the boulder decide that the Blind Bandit threw the match, that it was a fixed match, that she knew that this was going to happen, and that's why she did it, so they could hustle them out of their money. Aang and the gang catch up with the Blind Bandit at her home, where she is dressed precisely in the same outfit that Aang saw her in his vision. The Blind Bandit is a crowd favorite. One of our favorites as she grows. Her name's Toph.
Toph!
Yeah! Welcome to this story.
I love yes. Toph.
Oh my God.
I didn't love her at first, but she definitely grew on me.
She grows. She grows. The greatest earthbender of all time! Okay? Listen. They ask her to teach Aang earthbending, and she refuses and calls for her guards.
What a flex. She's like, I'm not even going to bother with you. Guards.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, it's so good. She had like straight Cersei vibes in this moment. Like, it's great. Power is power. That's what she's telling you. All right. So, Toph joins her family and Master Yu. It's clear that she is very sheltered and her family coddles her. Like, they believe that, you know, she's incapable. I mean, her dad is super ableist. Let's just call it what it is.
Like, yeah, he's like. Yeah. It's really a shame.
Really a shame. Like, treats her like she's incapable or because she's blind. Team Avatar is invited to this dinner where Toph downplays her abilities. She doesn't want her dad knowing that she's out here fighting in Earthbending 6. That's her side hustle. Stop blowing up her spot, Aang. Calm down. After dinner, she approaches Aang with a truce. They go on a walk, and she says that even though she can't see, she uses her feet to sense the earth. Just at that moment, she senses an ambush, and the ambush comes from the defeated challengers of the tournament, and they capture Aang and Toph for ransom. Toph's family pays the ransom, and she is released. But Zheng Fu wants to keep Aang because he wants to sell him to the Fire Nation. Like, you know, there's a bounty on this guy's head. Katara and Sokka ask Toph for help because they've all witnessed how quickly she just wiped these dudes out before. And basically, Toph, you know, like her dad is trying to pull her along and Toph is like, no, I'm going to go help him. And she, you know, washes them all again and frees Aang while her father washes. She's like, yo, I can wipe these, whatever. I'm done with these guys. And even Master Yu is surprised.
Okay, can we talk about Master Yu not knowing that his student is like the best earthbender in at least that town?
She's like the best earthbender that we've seen, and that's saying a lot because Bumi is nice with it.
Right.
Like, so that's like, she's by far the best that we've seen, right?
Right, and Master Yu's been tutoring her all this time, and he's like, oh, I didn't know she was that good.
So, which tells you Toph is also smart, because she's like, I'm going to not let him see my skills so that he can't, like, out me to my dad. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she can keep training. You know, it almost feels like the father is placating her by even letting her train. So to show off would have meant that he would probably stop her training, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So at this point, back at their house, Toph asks her parents to stop hiding her and to allow her to be herself, like, you know, honor the who she is. But instead, her father says that he will now have her guarded 24 hours a day because she has too much freedom. I mean, she's super restricted and sheltered, and now he says she has too much freedom. He wants Team Avatar to leave, and Team Avatar is escorted out. But just as they are about to fly away on Appa, Toph arrives and says her dad changed his mind and said that she was free to travel with them. This is not the truth, okay?
It's a lie. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Let's just call it what it is, too. She'll probably fit right in with Team Avatar.
It's true.
Who plays loose and fast with the facts every now and then? You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So, and her father, offers Zheng Fu and Master Yu gold to bring his daughter home and tells them to do whatever it takes. He's not happy with the Avatar taking his daughter, he thinks. But really, Toph is just like, I'm done with this dude. He hasn't treated me well. I love him, but I gotta go. So that's where our episode ends. And that's and now we have a new member. A honored member you will find throughout this of Team Avatar. Really cool.
Yeah. Toph is a very interesting character for a number of reasons, but I love that in so many ways the show is inclusive, and having a character who has a disability is great.
and like a disability and strong. I mean, this is the second one that they've introduced, right? The first one introduced kind of like his dad, right, was helping him to glide, and that like helped him with like not being able to walk and like get past not being able to walk, because if he couldn't walk, he could fly, right? And the mechanist, he kind of like comes to his son's aid and like helps him to be able to have this experience. But now they have another disabled character who is empowered by themselves, doesn't need help, and in fact, if Aang did an airbend, she would have washed Aang too, right? So it's such a powerful introduction for a character. I love it. I love the introduction. Mm-hmm. So what do we learn? What do we learn this episode?
So I think the main thing that we learned from this arc of episodes that was new information to us is that there are members of the Water Tribe outside of the North and South Poles.
Yeah.
So in the swamp, we're introduced to a new, like a water bending that we didn't know existed, which is like bending vines, right? Mm. So yeah. They're able to, well, the protector of the swamp is able to bend the vines because there's water in the vines.
Yeah.
And this idea that you can bend matter that includes water, this is some foreshadowing, and it will play a role in the story later, and certainly puts into question if we should reconsider the limitations of all bending, because maybe there are other ways to bend that are not always apparent. So I thought that was an interesting way to introduce it, but also just the fact that there are, you know, water benders outside of the Water Tribe was pretty cool to see too.
Yeah, no, 100%. I also like that. I mean, we knew, you know, something that I thought was really cool was that we knew that you could earthbend from Bumi in the last run of episodes that we talked about without having your hand, right? Because he just had his face exposed. But another thing about earthbending that I found that I took away from this was just Toph's ability to feel out the vibrations of what was going around her through her feet, to be able to see through her feet, to be one with Earth, to like manifest what Bumi was talking about, right? This idea of, we talked about like neutral Jing, and we talked about, you know, like that concept, but also just her being able to like say, oh, I hear and I see, and it's not her hearing things. She's seen like with her feet, which is something I think will grow over time too. So really cool. And so like the themes that we kind of go over, one of them to start off is connection. You know, the swamp episode explores the idea of connection. The swamp is actually one tree and its vines spread throughout the landscape. The interconnectedness of the swamp is representative of the world. We are all connected through shared history and nature. It is particularly important for Aang to consider this, right? Because of his role in what he's going to have to do in bringing peace to the world. As Harmony is all about that. Harmony is all about interconnectedness. Hugh also references time as a source of connection. Past, present, future, and they're all being one. The time is an illusion. The visions that Team Avatar sees demonstrates how their attachment and desires to their past and their futures are impacting their present moment. Katara's longing for a mother is both her past and her present, and perhaps will help to shape her future as well. And Sokka's love for Yue haunts him. It's still with him. It's something that he's working through and still hasn't quite worked through. And Aang's desire to learn earthbending shows him that he's going to find his future master. At first, these visions appear to lead them deeper into danger, but in the end, they lead them directly back to each other and to the present moment, where they can face the present danger that they're facing together, which, you know, shows you about how we are stronger, like this idea of connection and being stronger in togetherness, being stronger when we're united. And that's like a real great theme throughout this, because remember that when Harmony existed, all the nations were living in peace, all four of them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a theme.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting too that when they were separated, they had the visions, but when they're together, the visions aren't there. So this connection to their past or, you know, whatever their desire is something that is they're experiencing on an individual level. But when they come together, they're able to face this swamp monster effectively as a team. And so those things that may feel like they're holding them back actually had brought them closer together as a team, and they're able to face the monster, which turns out not to be a monster, but in the moment it is. So another theme from these episodes are identity. The arc of the episode introduced the much beloved character of Toph.
Woo.
Toph is first seen by Aang in his vision in the swamp. In the vision, she appears to be a carefree young girl laughing and running as Aang tries to catch up to her. But in reality, Toph is not at all carefree. Her parents try to protect her from the world because she has a disability and, in effect, are keeping her a secret. Despite this, Toph not only finds a way to carve out an identity for herself in the city, but also uses her blindness as a strength, feeling her way through the world rather than seeing her way through it. She hones this ability into making her one of the most powerful and intuitive earthbenders. At the end of the episode, Toph sheds this identity of the sheltered young girl and the identity of the blind bandit. She's just Toph, as she's always wanted to be. Another character is also embracing their alter ego in this these episodes. Zuko is being the blue spirit. He's basically a masked Avenger. He's free from the past that plagues him, no longer an exiled prince. He can move through the world without pity or fear that accompanies his station. And he can do whatever he wants without concerns about his honor. So it's interesting to see them both embrace and then for Toph shed these identities that allow them to be something other than what they would normally be in the eyes of the world and their families.
Yeah, and man, what a brave moment, right? Like Toph choosing to free Aang, and even before she had a real connection to Team Avatar, and showing herself to people who she's hidden herself from and who have treated her like they were ashamed of her and hiding her away for her whole lifetime. And for her to have that level of courage shows you just the strength inside of this person, that, that will. So it's really cool.
She's great.
And then our last theme would be the myth of the past. There's a common saying that history is written by the victors, but not for Chin the Great and Avatar Kyoshi, all right? It's
just not. Chin took the L. He took the L.
Yeah, exactly. In episode 5, Aang is being asked to answer for the crimes of one of his past lives, which is pretty interesting, right? Because we saw at the end of last season that the Face Stealer didn't ask for him to atone for what had happened in their previous interactions in the spirit world. So this shows you a clear delineation between the spirit world's way of handling things and the physical world, right? They're still, they're seeing the matter as the most important thing. Where the spirit world, he said, well, you're somebody different now, right? The Face Stealer did. So Ko was not that way. But it turns out, right? The story of how Chin, and this is why the spirit world can have, is so great at how they look at it, that it turns out that Chin the Great met his end, how he met his end was a myth that his people were perpetuating for 3 centuries. They held on to this idea. This theme is especially striking now, as Americans and other Western cultures are reckoning with myths of the past. Should we honor those who were responsible for the mistreatment and the suffering of others? This episode asks us to question the histories that we know, to investigate and interrogate what we believe. Too often, we uphold these false narratives of historical figures. The myth of Chin the Great is completely debunked in a matter of hours by 2 teenagers. Our history is more complex for sure, but it deserves that same level of interrogation to see what is really true. How did this really play out?
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was particularly interesting in this episode too, because when the rhinos appear, they immediately destroy the statue.
Yeah.
And this is something that's happening all over the world, really, where monuments to people who don't exactly have the records that we grew up believing that they had are being taken down, removed, replaced, put in museums instead of out in public squares. And so I just, this show is from many, many years ago, and I just thought that was really interesting for the present moment, that this myth of Chin the Great actually turned out to be something else. Chin was not great. Chin was a conqueror who was trying to oppress the people of Kyoshi, and they separated and made their own island.
Yeah. And it's as you know, we just talked about in that segment, and what you're saying here and what's happening in the world, the correlation also is with the dogma, the ideology, the idea around these things, that, you know, because it's been, you know, like you say, again, I know people don't love the episode, but the theme that was powerful out of the episode of The Great Divide is like these concepts that are passed down generation to generation to generation to generation, and they're believed to be true, like almost in the sense of an oral tradition, and then they get written down. And to be completely honest, like, we need to investigate those things. We need to look at those things. So the figurative statues, the actual statues coming down, and also, I believe in this episode, and I think we can look at it in our lives, it's also a symbolic thing around the ideology and the thought processes that are crumbling when you start taking down the physical matter, right? So mm-hmm. it's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just about interrogating the stories that we know and yep. the histories that we're taught. And to give them a little bit of a deeper look, should we yeah. look deeper into these basic stories that we learn from the time we're little children? So I thought this was really relevant to what we're experiencing in this moment in America, but also in other places in the world. They're also taking down monuments, which I did not see coming. That was not on my 2020 bingo board for sure.
No. Not at all, but you know, yeah. So the good things to think about for sure. Moving in, and let's talk about kind of like, I think that sets up nicely the context of this story, right? And there was a amazing article in the New York Times that was written by Maya Phillips, and it was entitled "Avatar: The Last Airbender Imagines a World Free of Whiteness," and it talks about the cultural relevance of, like, you know what Toni Morrison would speak a lot about imagining her stories without the white gaze, like that there was her world that was, she was creating, and it was independent of the white gaze. It was like these stories happening in a world where the people of color were the focal point. And I think this is what the point that Maya Phillips is getting at also, as there are some key points in the article that we just wanted to bring up for the pod to kind of talk about a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that I thought that was really interesting about this article that made me think about is the success of the show kind of demonstrates that stories don't have to be centered on white people or Europe, for mm-hmm. that matter, to be relatable to white audiences. This is something that as people of color, we've always known. Mm-hmm. Like, we can see ourselves in characters, whether or not they're the same culture, skin tone, histories as us. Even if they're inherently different, we can still relate to these characters. And what Atla shows is that that's true across the board, that this is a show that is entirely based on Eastern cultures. The creators of the show are Americans, but they mm-hmm. wanted to pay homage to Asian-like cultures. They're not perfect, right? They make some errors. For one thing, all the as the article points out, the voice actors are almost all American.
And somehow, like, the swamp had, you know, people from the southern region of the United States.
Yep.
But that's a whole, you know, I don't know.
I mean, there's some things that are not perfect. Like, the show definitely has an Americanized center, right? Mm-hmm. But it is still a show about cultures that seem really different from mm-hmm. what we learn about. Like, mm-hmm. even if we think about just the structure of the society, right? So really, the Earth Nation, Earth Kingdom, and Fire Nation are probably most like set up kind of like European-esque mm-hmm. kingdoms, but the water tribe, indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I loved about the show from the very first episode was that it starts with an indigenous people who live a tribal experience and who, you know, are not exploiting anything to get to buy. They're using skills to hunt and fish, and that's how we meet them. So it's really interesting to really put into context what this show actually meant. Like, now that it's been out for a long time and it's a part of pop culture, it doesn't seem that this is like revolutionary anymore to have a show that's so popular that's centered on people of color. But when it came out, that was kind of rare for animated series, especially being so popular.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue that it's not, I mean, it's still approaching less of a rarity, but it's not there yet, right? And I don't know. Yesterday, just a little of my story, I was flipping through channels and, like, you know, saw Black Panther and I said, oh, I'm going to flip in for like 5 minutes. And I ended up watching the whole thing. Why? Because that story is like a part of me. It's like the story in the story matters to me. The people in the story, the African culture, the culture of African American people, and the stories around how we have been separated from the continent for, you know, the time that we have, matter to me. And though that representation is something I couldn't look away from the screen, even just trying to dip in for 5 minutes. And that's what stories like this can do. And that was the biggest grossing comic book movie of all time, right? So, like, it's made $1 billion worldwide. So it's like we can have these stories that center on, you know, different cultures and reach a wide audience, because one of my most favorite stories in the world, period, anywhere, is Game of Thrones. And I'm hard pressed to find characters from ethnic background standpoint that I match up with very easily in Game of Thrones, outside of, you know, the people outside of Missandei and Grey Worm, which I love them. So, but the point is that I feel that it's really a powerful point you're making, and that was made in this article, is that,
yeah, I mean, I diversity just think, matters. I just think too how powerful it is to have children of all cultures exposed to ideas of Eastern philosophy, exposed to ideas from Eastern religion, which is frankly not something that I learned in school. You know, we kind of learn very broad strokes what the religions are, but we don't learn in depth what they, you know, any of their tenets, what is the philosophy based on. And while a lot of kids will watch Avatar and not, you know, read that deeply into it, we're obviously two adults, right? So, like, we're looking, and we're podcasters, we're looking for the themes. I just think it's really wonderful that they, if they wanted to, they could. They've now been exposed to mindfulness. They've now been exposed to, you know, the philosophies around attachment. Like, these are all things that are tenets of Eastern culture and philosophy that you don't really always get if you go to a public school in the United States. So I think that this article really highlighted for me one of the many reasons that this show is really still relevant even today. It's an incredible story. It's well done, so that's all true. But also, it is entirely centered on non-white people, which is something that shouldn't be extraordinary in 2020, but still is, and especially is extraordinary in the realm of fantasy.
Yep, 100%. Fantasy, we still have some miles to cross, but we're getting there.
We're definitely getting here. I mean, the first show that you and I covered was His Dark Materials, which has, the casting was very mindful. They tried to be quite diverse. And also, main characters in that story are the Egyptians, who are a nomadic people of color. So I think that, like, fantasy is getting better. It's also demonstrated through just the sheer fact that Black Panther did so well, that that sends a very powerful message to Hollywood, which is that people will pay to see stories about people of color, which is something that I think Hollywood has always been frightened that, you know, white people won't go see those stories. So I think that even, you know, you can speak more to representation in Star Wars, but that's gotten more diverse too. So I think it's great that
it did, but then they did away. You know, I feel like I'm keeping it 100. Like, I feel like in the last series of movies, it got really diverse, but then they gave the characters that were, you know, people of color very little to do in the last few films. And that was one of the, I think a lot of people felt that way. And what was interesting is I truly don't think only people of color or black people or Asian people felt that way. I feel like they, like the general fan base, felt like you gave these characters that had so much potential nothing to do. Like, what happened? You know what I mean? Like, and that's something we can expand upon for a long, long time, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, we talked a little bit about this with His Dark Materials, where we were saying that, like, even though we were happy that the casting was more diverse and there were black characters especially, but the folks who died were almost entirely those characters. And so that was a bit problematic too. So I think that, you know, we're getting better. We still have a long way to go. I'm excited about where we are in terms of, like, fiction and Hollywood and realizing that stories can be made that are not almost entirely white, like Game of Thrones or The Witcher, but also, you know, they shows like they're making a live action Avatar. And I really hope that Netflix does not try to whitewash it. And His Dark Materials, they made a very big effort to make sure that it was diverse. So I think that it's getting better, but, you know, as with all things, we're going to learn, and nothing is perfect when you try it at first. So, you know, we'll see.
We'll get there. And, you know, and you may be at the end of this podcast like, man, you guys are discussing this in depth. And I think one of the things that the reason I'm even saying this is because this portion of it is that I really want, you know, our listeners to know one of the reasons, you know, Andrea and I are family. We're cousins. We would have these conversations, like, without recording them and sharing them about our favorite stories or stories we're exploring. But one of the reasons that we decided to do a podcast was because we looked around and saw that there was a limit to representation of people who look like us. There were some, and there's a lot, and we love a lot of those podcasts and those creatives, but we wanted to add a voice and a perspective to things that added to the conversation around diversity. And it matters to us. And we hope that all of you continue to be part of our kin in this journey on Kin Folklore. It's super important to us to see that we all have representation from our abilities to disabilities to our ethnic background, gender. All of those things matter, that we're all seen. So,
absolutely.
Have a good one. We'll see you next week. It was wonderful. Please, please, please subscribe to the podcast and leave us some comments and tell us what you think. We're seeing the chatter online. It's been great. We've been able to respond to some people. Keep it going.
And we really like all of the feedback you're sending us. Send us an email if you have feedback that is more in depth, or if you have things that you would like to add to our analysis. This is our first time watching this show, so we would love to hear from more fans. It's kingfolklore@gmail.com.
Sounds great. Till next week. See you guys.
Bye.